And we are live, I believe. Apologies for the delay, everybody. Pox is having a few technical problems, still having some technical problems at the moment, actually, unfortunately. So you've got a bit of a two-man show for a little while. I'm joined by my good friend, the man I have nicknamed the Bad Take Gamer, BMG, is with me this evening. How are you doing, mate?
Gamers, I'm good, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on here, but bad take gamer, bad take or right take. So, you know, potato, potato.
We'll let the chat decide at the end of the show, mate. We'll see.
We will.
You know, I'm just playing with you, mate. You know, we love you. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. You know, we had a few weeks where we weren't able to do a show. We did one Sunday. We got another one tonight. So it's good to be able to get into that regular cadence of shows again. Hopefully we can keep it up. We are unfortunately competing with Boxenberger's World of Gaming podcast night, and he has a special guest in Jez Corden on, which doesn't do us any favors, but I'm sure it's a great show over there. I'm looking forward to catching up on that a little bit later. So there's a little bit of spicy Halo news. Dare we say it, BMG going on over the course of today. So,
that game Halo. Where have I heard of that before? No, it's not. No, it's not the Destiny one. No, Destiny's the better one. Yeah.
That's the one, mate. That's the one. That's the dead game. I believe that the word you were looking for was dead. The dead game. So
that's it.
Yeah, we were just saying as we were kind of planning the show this evening, we were saying that there's not an awful lot of. Not an awful lot of news, really. Last week or the past couple of weeks have been pretty bonkers in terms of news, kind of like a mini E3 in September. And earlier this week, like things have maybe just mellowed out a little bit. But then today in particular, things have just booted off, BMG, haven't they? So we've probably got a fair bit to cover tonight.
Yeah, slightly. Things have slightly dropped today, gone a bit crazy, all sorts of news, exciting news, not necessarily all... You know, good news, but news all the same to discuss and get into. And I'm looking forward to it. It's exciting to be here.
Yeah, and looking forward to the rest of the show, mate. Like I say, hopefully we will have Puxley able to jump in with us once he sorts out his technical problems. He is in the green room. I can still see him. So hopefully he'll be able to join in any minute now. Unfortunately, no Luke tonight. Luke's a little tied up. I believe he's actually in the UK at the moment, so I don't think he's around for the next week or so. So Luke, if you are listening, hope you enjoy yourself in the UK, pal. And obviously we look forward to having you back on the show soon.
I think it's the jet lag that's got him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a little unwell last time, and then he's, you know, it's a big trip, BMG. It's a pretty monstrous flight. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's jet lag, sleep deprivation.
That's it.
Be a rough old game.
I believe it's a nightmare, you know, exchanging money from Jersey dollars to, you know, pounds. It's quite a long haul. You have to write out slips, you know, because obviously they make their own monopoly money and stuff. It's an ordeal.
Probably written in crayons and stuff like
yeah.
that. To be fair, I imagine it's probably not too bad. I imagine it's maybe a 1-to-1 with GBP over there, but obviously the exchange rates might be favorable depending on how that works. So he could be out there taking advantage of that and buying some more statues while he's in the UK, you know, to add to his wonderful collection. So before we get into the topics then, BMG, I just want to say I do have a little indie game that just launched on Game Pass on the screen today, which is called Let's Build a Zoo, which is kind of like the old school sort of Zoo Tycoon games. I don't know if you were into them, mate, but the kind of the new ones didn't really do anything for me. The 3D and having to drive around it, I was like, oh, I kind of want that top down, that more management style game. So I've actually been looking forward to this. So I was excited to play a little bit earlier today, and I enjoyed what I was playing. But what have you been playing recently, mate?
Oh, well, as everyone knows, I am a bit of a Destiny fan. Just a small
are
one.
You?
Just slightly. Oh, it's just this, you know, it's only the world's best live service FPS game on the planet. Well, it's just a small one. Playing a bit of Destiny. I've also jumped into a bit of The Forgotten City. It's, you know, I've been sat on Game Pass for a while, so I've
completed that.
Oh, really? What did you think?
It's tough, isn't it? It is. It's really very tough, especially if you're not into that genre.
Very. It's hard to. I'm still trying to figure stuff out. I like the time loop mechanic because, you know, they kept going about this golden rule and no one knows if it's real, if it's not. So, of course, I had to do something to, you know, try it out. And, yeah, it's real. The golden rule is real.
It is, yeah. The first thing I thought is I'll test whether that golden rule is real or not. And, yes,
exactly, yeah.
It absolutely is.
I've got Deathloop. I have downloaded it onto Xbox, because obviously that's now up on Game Pass. I've not had a chance to dive into it as of yet, because I've also been jumping onto the PlayStation side, playing some more Horizon Forbidden West, because I want to try and get that out the way. October, do God of War 2018, ready for Ragnarok in November.
You got it all planned out then, mate, by the sounds of things.
Planned, but plans and actions, you know, never seem to go hand in hand most of the time. I'm very easily distracted. Yeah, I'm one of them people, if I saw a squirrel running outside, I'd chase it with a stick, you know. Very easily distracted.
Yeah, but still, yeah, we actually, one of the things that we probably will get onto is today is probably the games of next year. We've obviously got a few games left this year, and maybe not so much on the Xbox side, unfortunately. We've got a couple of big hitters, particularly with PlayStation and maybe Nintendo, but next year is hopefully, I say that, hopefully the year where things kick off a little bit for Xbox, so we'll probably delve into that a little bit. But yeah, BMG, obviously, it is absolutely kicking off this week, so we do have a lot of things. Honestly, I don't think we're going to have time to get through everything this evening, so we'll see what we do get up to. But before that, I just want to say thank you to Def Leppard and Mesuko for joining us in the chat. Thank you both, gents, for dropping by. Hopefully a few more people will be dropping in shortly. Again, hopefully Pucks is able to join. He's dropped out the green room now, so he must be trying something else. So BMG, as the special guest on the show, where would you like to start today, mate? What topic has tickled your fancy today where you'd like to start?
I tell you where I want to start. One of the biggest companies on the planet closing their game streaming service.
Big news, mate. Mm. Yeah, really big
slight
news.
Big news.
So, yeah.
All five players are gutted, I'm telling you.
I'm going to pause you just there, BMG. I think, let's see, do we have a Puxley?
Hello, can you hear me okay?
There he is.
Hello.
We can.
Oh, fantastic. Apologies for that. I don't know what was going on, but my permissions seem to have been reset and I didn't know how to enable them again. So it wasn't allowing me to select an audio input or output device. That's why it kept saying that no device selected, I think on your end. But it's all sorted now, so we're all good. Apologies, chaps.
That's all right, mate. I'm glad you were able to join us, pal. We were just about to get into the Stadia news, I think, but before we do that, Pox, how have you been, mate? It's been a little while since you've been on the show.
Oh, man, it has been. It's been a horribly long time. I'm very well, thank you. I've recently started a new job, among other things going on in general life, so been pretty busy. Number of different reasons why I've not been able to make it, but I have missed the show, and I'm glad to be back on tonight talking games with you guys, and I know earlier in the week we were saying that, you know, oh man, what topics are there? Because it's been pretty quiet since last week. And then it all seems to have dropped on us out of nowhere, which is all great news.
It has, mate. Yeah. So, we were going to start with the Stadia news. It's a bit of a bombshell, but I think it was inevitable that this news was going to come at some point. In my opinion, the surprise is that it took this long. More than anything. So so we'll start with Stadia, BMG. So yeah, the news came out. Phil Harrison, the Grim Reaper of gaming, as I think people like to call him, put a blog post out to announce that, unfortunately, as of January 2023, I believe it was, they're actually going to be shutting Stadia services, so you will no longer be able to play any games that you've purchased. However, I think a really important point to get out there sort of nice and early is they are refunding all hardware and software costs as part of that, which I think is good. At least, you know, I think we'll touch on to maybe the why it failed in a moment, but obviously having to buy your games and potentially lose them in this situation, probably, well, it would have sucked for a lot of people if that was the case. So BMG, what are your thoughts then? Is this, you know, surprising? Is it later than you expected? Where are you feeling? Well, or how are you feeling about this? Sorry,
it's definitely not surprising. That's for sure. You know, it was as a lot of people said, and I agree with. It was dead on arrival. The issues they were having, it just wasn't a good thing. You're paying for a cloud subscription service, but buying your own games, it just I don't think it was something that was ever going to work. Never, it was never going to work. It's just one of them. It was struggling. They were shutting down their own studios because, you know, which they did earlier. Was it earlier this year or late last year where they closed their first party studio down? I can't quite remember.
It was maybe even longer than that. It might have been like 2020 or 2021, that I think, yeah. But you're right, yes, it was kind of on the wall a long time ago, really, wasn't it?
And we're surprised it's lasting. I'm shocked that it's even lasting until January. But Google's, they are one of them companies, is they'll do something, and if it doesn't work, they just can it. It's kind of one of them. They've done it with many things in the past. You know, Microsoft have done the same sort of thing. If it doesn't work, they just bin it. It's gone. But I'm shocked, very shocked, that they are refunding people for the hardware and for stuff that they've bought, subscriptions, however that's going to work. That's good faith. That is very good faith. I'm quite surprised of that, because that was always a worry, and it always is a worry with this sort of thing, is, you know, I buy this and eventually this goes away. What happens to the content I own or lease? Because we never actually own games anymore. So, but it's good to see that. But it's also, I am very upset, and, you know, and I feel heartbroken for the all five people who play Stadia. Please don't come at me. And I will sign your petition to try and keep it going if you want. But I do not like Puxley posted for us from Stadia, posted on the 29th of July, 2022. Stadia is not shutting down. Rest assured, we're always working on bringing more great games to the platform in Stadia Pro. Let us know if you have any other questions. Oh, hilarious, hilarious. But yeah, I think it's writing on the wall. It was always going to be a struggle. It was an uphill battle for him, and I just can't see it. It was going to last anyway, you know. And Amazon Luna, I know they're only in America at the moment. They don't seem to be branching anywhere else, which is strange. But I think that could end up going the same way. I think they get a lot of numbers for them couple of games they brought out is because they own Twitch and they pay their Twitch streamers to stream it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny you talk about that tweet. Talk about like a tweet aging badly. That's kind of one for the record books, that, isn't it? So, but you make a couple of good points, especially about kind of the first party studios, BMG, which is, you know, the writing was on the wall. It's obvious that they pivoted a long time ago, and they kind of, I guess, reduced their investment in this as kind of the business venture, and that made what was already a bloody difficult or some challenge that they had on their hands made it even more difficult for them, unfortunately. But as you say, the five people, maybe six, that actually used it on a regular basis, unfortunately, you know, they're kind of out of pocket a little. Well, not out of pocket, thankfully they're getting refunded, but now they, you know, they don't have the service that they've maybe relied on.
But there could be a positive that may come out of this, because obviously they had these, you know, your subscriptions you could subscribe to on top of your subscriptions with Stadia. One of them being Ubisoft Plus, where it was the full library, brand new games. I wonder if potentially, because obviously Microsoft have their cloud system and stuff, that maybe we could see Microsoft might come in, say, look, this is shutting down, you've already got a service working on cloud, maybe bring it over to Xbox on the as a more of a cloud incentive, something you can do over the cloud more for now as a startup instead of console, maybe. But
Interesting. Pox, where do you land on cloud services in general, Matt?
In general, I definitely think they have a place. It's more execution that I think seems to be the issue for a lot of these platforms. I think talking about Google and why it never really caught on. I mean, I think you've said it yourself, Scott, on previous shows, and I've mirrored it in that out of the various streaming services I've tried, the Google one actually seems to be one of the best ones that I have experienced. Yep. It has a great underlying foundation, and the tech, it just works very well. It's the most seamless that I've experienced, even better so than xCloud. At least when I last tried xCloud, I've not used it in a while. Part of me, well, I don't want to say I was shocked or surprised, because I think we all knew that, you know, the time was going to come. And if anything, this has proven everybody's point as well, in that why nobody jumped on this in the first place, because Google in the past have had a bad history of releasing various new products and tools and services for people to use, and that they wanted everyone to latch onto. And no matter how popular or not some of them were, Google have been notorious for just out of nowhere shutting these services down. And I think a lot of people have had the concern that, you know, why do I want to pay for games on this platform if there's ultimately that background risk and, you know, in the back of your mind that Google may shut this down. And lo and behold, they have done. And I think the one pleasantly surprised thing I did notice that's been mentioned, it's the fact that they've said that they're going to refund everything, no matter what. Yeah. Like if you've bought hardware through Google, and or if you've bought any software through the Google Store, you get all your money back, and you get to keep the hardware, obviously. But I thought it was funny they even mentioned that as well, that, oh, no, yeah, you get to keep your hardware, but you're going to get a refund for it if you bought it through us. And it's like, oh, wow, thanks.
Yeah, so I think the only thing they're not refunding is the actual subscription costs.
Obviously, yes, for the Pro, the Stadia Pro thing, yeah.
Yeah, for the Pro tier, which I think is, I guess, fair enough. Like you say, I'm surprised they're refunding anything. I guess they kind of have to when it comes to games. But especially the hardware cost, that was kind of a big surprise. And
yeah, that was a surprise. So they're arguably making a massive loss out of this then, really, aren't they? Because, at least the Stadia money. I mean,
some of these refunds are going to be massive. Like I saw a tweet from somebody earlier on who said, look, I'm probably going to get a refund of $600 or something like that. That's just one person.
So they were really invested in Stadia then. Jesus.
Yeah, it's one of the five.
exactly. So, but you're absolutely right, Pucks. I've tried most of the streaming services. The only one I haven't tried is the Luna, because I don't actually think it's available in the UK yet. And Stadia, I will say confidently, although admittedly it's been a little while since I've...
Oh, you there, Scott.
I'm back. Apologies. I just ripped my earphones out of my mic there. Apologies. Sorry, where was I? Out of the ones that I've tried, Luna excluded, it was the best. So it's obvious that the technology there was probably the best on the market, in my opinion. And yet they've proved that it hasn't worked for them, because they've got everything else wrong. The technology was good. But the business model, I think, is kind of where they really fell on their asses, essentially. And that's where services like Game Pass and GeForce Now, in particular, have kind of maybe got a better solution. It's why maybe they've managed to stay around a little longer. Obviously, Xbox is backed by Xbox, so you would expect that. But BMG, do you think there's actually a space for this type of service that Stadia is trying to offer? Do you think there is kind of a market for these services?
No, to be honest, especially in today's climate and the way the planet is and everything at the moment, I'd say no. The whole thing is a good idea. It's a good thing. I just don't think the whole you have to buy the thing, buy the hardware, pay them a subscription fee to use the hardware, and then pay for your other subscriptions in games on top. It just doesn't make sense. You know, Microsoft offer, you know, you just buy the console and you've got cloud anywhere access to it, you know, using Game Pass, but having all them games that are included in Game Pass. Yeah, I know it's still in beta, but I just don't think Google, you know, I think they rushed into it. They have got the technology. Their streaming cloud technology is amazing. But I just don't think they were ready to come into this industry with it. I think they just rushed it, hire a load of people that have sort of been in this industry, and hopefully they can do it and we'll have something successful. But the way it launched, the way it went, it was just shambles from the start, to be honest. But I'd be more interested to see if they actually license that technology out or sell the technology, because that'd be, you know,
the interesting thing is on the Google blog post, they actually mentioned that they were looking into industry partners or something along those kind of lines in terms of the wording about throwing this tech out to industry partners, etc. type comment. So it does sound like they're not throwing it away. It sounds like they're going to be wanting to integrate it with their other services as well as potential third parties. So you never know. It could be in other stuff later on.
Yeah. I think if I can maybe just quickly read a bit from the blog post, I'll channel my inner Phil Harrison if I can. I'll try not to destroy any gaming platforms in the next few moments. But they basically say the underlying technology platform that powers Stadia is proven at scale and transcends gaming. That's just a load of bollocks. But we see clear opportunities to apply this technology across other parts of Google, like YouTube, Google Play, and AR, as well as make it available to our industry partners. So yeah, you're right, Pucks. It's obvious that they're not necessarily just throwing it all in the bin. We'll probably see it used for... It might already be used for some other services. I believe it might be used on some of the cloud releases on the Switch. Actually,
If
I may be mistaken, so please don't quote me on that.
But I believe
I think it might, you know, games like Control and things like that might not be Control, but you know, the cloud versions of games, on the Switch, I believe some of them may, maybe one of them may use kind of Stadia as the back end tech behind it that allows that to work. And I guess that's probably where they're pivoting to kind of offer it to developers or platforms or publishers rather than trying to have its own platform.
I wonder if Sony might actually look at this and try and lease it, because I don't think Microsoft will, because they've got their own platform, they've got Azure, and I think is it Sony, don't they have a partnership with Microsoft for Azure? So maybe this would be an opportunity for them, you know, instead of leasing this and working in partnership with Microsoft, why not go where it's even better with Google and, you know, maybe come up with a good deal on them and get it from their side. Yeah. But the other downside to all this, is the people that are probably going to have lost jobs, you know, because obviously they've got hardware team, people do all the networking side and all that sort of thing. I can't imagine they would keep them on. So if anyone does lose the jobs or anything like that, you know, I hope you land on your feet. I hope you can find somewhere else. There's always seems to be jobs in the industry at the moment, but it's sad in that sense. It's a shame that it's one less, not, I wouldn't say competitor, but one less option for gaming in the industry. And it's kind of just makes it just that little bit smaller. But
one thing I'd like to know in general is how popular is cloud gaming? Like, I'd like to know the numbers of people who use cloud gaming as their primary platform, you know, because I suppose given the current climate of the world and stuff, when, you know, when people have to tighten their wallets or whatever, all that kind of jazz, and, you know, the first things that tend to go are subscription services. So, you know, if cloud gaming's your primary source of entertainment and you've got to tighten your belt, you know, have you got to, you've got to give up your entertainment, right, rather than a nice box that you can play offline? It's a weird one, isn't it? I think about it, I think, you know, is it as viable as we've previously mentioned in the past?
The financial aspect of it, Pox, is really interesting, because you can kind of combine subscription services with cloud when talking about, like, the fiscal realities of the world right now. And I guess the argument could be made is, right, if you want to play a game on an Xbox, you got to buy, I guess the Xbox obviously has the S, so you've got to at least buy the hardware up front. You've then got to buy the games on top of it, or you've got to pay for the subscription as well. I guess when it comes to cloud, I guess Netflix could be applied to this as well. you've got a situation where you don't have those upfront costs. You've just got the one monthly fee and you get access to tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or even more hours of entertainment that typically in the past you would have to spend. I mean, Christ, I don't know if you guys have been to the cinema anytime recently, but Jesus, like going to the cinema is for two people, it's like what, like 50 quid, 60 quid or something like that for a couple of hours. And Netflix, yep, that's 4 months of Netflix on the higher tier, longer on the lower tier. So from a financial perspective, like subscription services in general, I guess, are maybe right for the current economic climate. Would it be wrong to say it, Pucks? Well, would it be fair?
I think it's a fair comment, yeah. It's, I mean, ultimately, with streaming services in general, and again, this is one of those topics that's been done to death, I guess, but like they work fantastic when it comes to video, like general video media, movies and films and whatever else, because you just sit there watching something buffer in the background, right? That's all it is. But with cloud gaming, it's just so more involved, isn't it? You know, like with needing to have some form of hardware, connect it up, need to have a more than just a decent connection to make sure that you've got no like minimal input lag and all that kind of stuff. And I think even from what I've seen online and people reviewing stuff, that even on some of the best connections out there, you know, people still struggle to hit your 1080p levels of game streaming and stuff. And it just gets to a point where arguably, yes, it's more financially viable if you don't have a dedicated box or whatever. But in terms of the type of experience you get, you know, the money, you pay that money for an experience, right? That's why we all pay what we do for our consoles, knowing that we're going to get those top tier experiences no matter what. The only thing we have to rely on is that the games are developed to a good standard, right? Whereas on streaming tech, no matter what kind of big or small screen you have, there's all these little issues and holes you have to fill and all these inconsistencies. And even on the Switch side of things, I've used a bit of cloud gaming, or on the demos, I should say. I've not bought a game with cloud, but it's just been like, they're okay. And I've got a decent internet at home and a good connection, albeit it's wireless on my Switch. I don't have it hardwired for a router and for an Ethernet or anything. But even then, it starts dropping out and whatever else. And every time I try these demos and I think, you know, do people really pay for this? Like, is the Switch as part of the better markets for it? Is this really a viable market for the product? Like, you know, like the Resident Evil Village that recently came out and they released a cloud demo for that. And they recommend you need to have a good connection XYZ. It's just like, I appreciate that, you know, the resources have been put in to release these games on those services via a platform such as cloud, but I don't know. I just don't feel like they work that well.
I mean, we might get onto it, but obviously Logitech at very least seem to think there's a market for purely a cloud only device.
These are their new 5G devices. Is that right?
This doesn't even have 5G. This is Wi-Fi only, the Logitech Wi-Fi device. Only.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
There was another device, I think it was a Razer device. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
That might be what I'm thinking of if it's 5G.
Yeah, that's the one that has like the you can put a SIM card in it, but the Logitech doesn't. So yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Pucks, because I think one of the big differences between like a movie streaming service and a game streaming service is there is a clear difference in the quality of the experience that you're getting. Mm. Obviously, you know, the picture quality on streaming service isn't going to be as good as a Blu-ray or at the cinema, but the difference between the two, it's not going to impact your experience of the movie, generally speaking. While with a game, particularly latency and any pixelation on the screen can have a severe impact on your experience. And you're right, people are buying these games as they did on Stadia on the Switch for a purely streaming experience, which to me is bonkers, and which is why I think the Game Pass model and the GeForce model, where they're more complementary to your existing services or other solutions that you've got, like hardware or I guess local native games or however you want to refer to it, is kind of the way that these services have to go, at least for now, in order to be successful, until obviously the technology improves to the point where it basically there's no perceivable difference between local native hardware and streaming hardware.
I think that's the key thing as well, isn't it? What you said there, in that technology needs to be at that point where it is ready for the mainstream. So I don't know, it's a weird one. I've got these two different frames of minds going on at once as I speak. But part of me wants to think that the technology just purely isn't quite there yet to have the experience that everybody wants and expects. But at the same time, the other part of me is going, well, I suppose maybe these kind of devices need to start being made and developed and put out there now for the technology to get boosted. But I still don't know if in the long term people are going to worry about cloud only devices when there are. I mean, because I don't know. Do people want a game on the go all the time? But even with a Wi-Fi device, I mean, what? So they expect you to tether it to your phone if you want to go out with it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we can come onto the Logitech G Cloud now. I guess it's a natural pivot. But with that device, I guess the idea is like a Switch. You'll be playing it in your home, but obviously just in your hands, in the same way that you would probably a Steam Deck or a Switch. I guess at least a Steam Deck and Switch, you can play native games. But it is a bit unusual. I guess it must be a niche market. But I guess, yeah, they're expecting you just to be someone who maybe sits at home and wants to play downstairs while the missus is watching TV or something like that, you know, where maybe you've got a Wi-Fi connection. But then at that point, you're in the house anyway.
Exactly. You know?
Like, especially the price. And I guess we're kind of fully pivoting over a bit now, but the price of the G Cloud, it's more expensive than the Series S.
Oh, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Why wouldn't you just buy...
Is this the same device where if you wanted a device like that, if you just paid, like, what, 50 quid more, you just get a Steam Deck instead?
Yeah, so
arguably much more powerful, and it's got all those facilities for offline and online, you know?
Exactly. Like, I think it's $350, but they've kind of got a pre-order bonus where you can buy for $300 at the moment. So it is technically $350, but it's got a discounted pre-order price.
Right.
So for $350, you can get a Series S and a game, or an extra controller, or a Steam Deck for an extra 20. I think the Steam Deck starts at like $380 or $370.
Or a year's worth of Game Pass with cloud.
Yeah, exactly, BMG. So yeah, I'm honestly not too sure who that device is aimed at personally.
But it's another one. Is it not in part a bit of partnership with Xbox as well for cloud? I think it's the same with the Razer. That's they're announcing fully on the 15th of October. It's like it seems to be Microsoft's mentioning both of them. You know, you'd be able to do cloud gaming. So it's like, is this way Microsoft Xbox not having to do their own handheld, doing it this way in partnership, seeing how that goes over making their own device? Well, for the price, though, that Logitech, you know, I don't know about you guys, but if I'm gaming and I'm in my house, I sit up in my man cave playing my computer. If I'm if I'm sat downstairs, I'm watching TV because I want to watch TV and not game, and I'm not going to sit in bed and play it because I go to bed to go to bed, not to sit and stare at a screen in the dark for a couple of hours and not being able to sleep. Not many now, because I think contracts changed in the UK a long time ago. You don't really get unlimited data unless you're paying through the nose for it. But I don't know who's saying. Is it America only at the moment, though, the Logitech?
Yes, I believe it's kind of like a soft launch, I think. So it's the States and Canada. I think maybe they're trying to test the waters of it. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, BMG, because I'm someone who does stream games to my phone downstairs sometimes. But it depends on the type of experience that I'm after. You know, just as an example, Slay the Spire is a game that I played on my phone via the cloud a lot, and it's a game I really enjoyed. But it's
is that via touch screen or controller?
Touchscreen, as well. But it's a card game. It's a deck building card game. So my experience isn't impacted by having to rely on the touch controls. I do have a Razer Kishi as well, though, which I've used, which I think is an excellent device, actually. And when it works, it can work really, really well. But I'm not going to play Halo doing that. I'm not going to play Forza with that. I'm not going to play Destiny and Call of Duty games like that. I'll happily play, like I say, Slay the Spire, which is a card game, Obviously, I've got Let's Build a Zoo on the screen here as well. This is taken from a laptop, but this is a type of game I'd be happy to play on the cloud with either touchscreens or with the Kishi, because there's a little bit of latency. It's not going to impact my ability to play the game, but trying to play Halo, it would. So I would often find myself playing Slay the Spire and things like that downstairs. Maybe the missus is watching something on TV and we're having a chat, and it just means I've got something to play in the background.
While giving her your full attention.
Yeah.
Sounds like a conversation.
She's got some shite on the TV, BMG. She's not giving me her full attention either. I mean, to be fair, now I kind of just come upstairs a little bit more. I've got a little bit of a man cave these days. But, you know, there have been times when I have, you know, taken advantage of that and used it, and I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed having that option. But the key thing is it's very much just an option. It's limited in what games I can use. It's a nice to have. It's not the entire purpose of me having Game Pass Ultimate or, you know, Xbox as a platform. It's kind of something that's a little extra, shall we say. And obviously Stadia, kind of going back to that, that was its entire platform. That was the only way you could play those games. You had to buy them. You couldn't just subscribe and get access to games, although they did have kind of like a little bit of a Games with Gold thing going on. And they kind of fell flat in the face a little bit with that.
The thing is, it's like you've also very soon we're going to see more and more of like the Xbox side coming to TVs, and this, you know, the rumored dongle that you're soon going to be able to get. I've got Sky Glass, and they actually have a partnership with Microsoft and Xbox, which more stuff's meant to be coming next year for it. I think it's going to be one of the TVs in the UK that will be getting the app to be able to play Game Pass through.
Samsung TVs.
Yeah, they've got it at the moment, but the actual Sky Glass itself, they have a full partnership. Xbox is actually, it's partly integrated into the TVs already. You hook up to your Series S or X, you actually get the proper pictures, the full logos and everything on the main, you know, it's they've got Kinect coming to the TV next year, which is very bizarre. Yeah. They're releasing they're going back to that, you know, talking to, you know, family on the other side of the world through a camera, through your TV, and it's the Kinect, which is coming out next year.
Holy shit. You know what it is?
Buy some more hardware for it.
Do you ever think sometimes that Microsoft were maybe just like a little too early with the Xbox One? Because if you think about like the way that kind of things have evolved since then with like these smart devices, with voice, with AR and things like that.
Be careful because that means we'd have to admit that Don Matrick was actually a genius before his time.
Hey, maybe he was. Maybe one day, you know what, Don Matrick will have his redemption arc.
BMG, I do actually kind of agree with you there, Scott, because, you know, think about it, in like early 2013, I know it came out, but around that period in time in general is, I think, arguably, the internet was still, I don't want to say in its infancy, but in terms of how we know it today, it was still kind of developing. More and more people were kind of getting online and starting to understand what you can do on the internet. And there was still a lot of, as you say, like a lot of people had trust issues with, you know, putting your credit card and bank card details through Google and securing all of your data and doing all of these types of stuff. Whereas nowadays, we all do it with a blink of an eye. Google Pay. Oh, yeah. All of my card info is on there. You know, I just click a button, I've ordered something, or I'm talking to people through microphones, through different services. And do you know what I mean? It's like,
in the last 10 years, it's
developed so much, and the amount of trust we now have in technology, whereas I think back then where it was all new, more people were cautious of it. Whereas nowadays, as I say, we all just go on board of it, right? And we just all take it for granted and do everything when everything we want, and all the data gets put out there for everyone to see. So, you know,
that is such a good point, mate. That is such a good point, because I remember the articles back when Microsoft announced it. And to be fair, let me be clear, it was a fucking stupid thing for them to do. Like, I'm not saying in hindsight they should have done it was good or anything like that. But if you remember the articles and almost the fear-mongering about, you know, Microsoft are going to be spying on you. You know, they've got a camera and they've got a microphone in there. And then people put a Facebook camera in their homes these days. They're willing to let Facebook have access to a video feed and audio feed of their homes. And it's pretty mental how the world has evolved. You know, Amazon, I've got Echoes, I've got Google Homes in the house, but at the same time, I wasn't sort of adverse to having the Kinect in my home at the time as well. So yeah, it is pretty mad how people's perceptions or people's, I guess concerns about privacy has kind of changed over the past decade. People are happy to have a Kinect in their home effectively now.
Yeah, another thought kind of on the same line that I kind of thought about earlier today, actually. I know it's not quite the same, but you know how, again, it feels like it's been forever, but over, say, the last 8 to 10 years when crypto was a big thing and, you know, crypto mining was like a thing what seemingly felt like forever, and graphics cards prices were always through the roof and have been for years because of people just nabbing them up for mining. And then out of nowhere, in the last couple of months, the whole crypto market's kind of crashed and everybody's selling their hardware. And it seems like it seems like now the bubble's burst in that kind of area. And people are now going to, it kind of feels like people now slowly start moving on from that kind of thing. Obviously, it will still exist in some fashion, I'm sure. But part of me has wondered, in the same vein, does an emerging technology such as cloud gaming, this big, wonderful thing, gaming on the go, anywhere you go, you know, is this going to ultimately become a fad as well? Like, will it die a death again? I don't know. And it almost like VR in a way, because VR came out arguably in the late 90s at first in very primitive fashion. And I don't think, you know, then it kind of resurrected a bit more in, was it 2014, 2015, when the first Oculus came out? And then 6-7 years on from that, VR's kind of now at a point where it seems like it's now a viable thing. So this is an open question, it's a hypothetical, but part of me was wondering whether or not cloud gaming is this new thing that's kind of been out for a while. It's been experimented on since the early 2010s. It's now gotten to a point where it feels like it's getting there, but maybe it's not quite there. Then it might die for a little bit. Technology will broaden a bit more. And then maybe there might become a point in the future when we go, actually, it is properly viable now. We can now really do gaming on the go at 1080p, 60, whatever else. Do you get what I'm saying? I feel like I'm just kind of rambling now, but
no, I think it's fair. And I think what you're ultimately getting at, mate, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you're talking about the technology. Just for this to be a viable mainstream option, the technology needs to improve, where the difference between native and local gaming is imperceptible compared to a streaming version. Because then at that point, it makes sense. You get the same experience. You don't have to have a big bulky device that's generating heat and taking up power. You just need a dongle or just an app and a controller. You don't need discs and things like that. But I think the reality is we're probably a hell of a long way away from that being the reality, I would say, at this point.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I think maybe what... I'm going to push it out and say maybe up to 10 years away. I think when streaming tech in the kind of fashion that we want it to be at is kind of, I feel like that kind of distance is the kind of time frame we're going to need, because you know, we're at this point in time, I think, where, you know, a lot of companies want to lower the amount of power that devices consumes, and, you know, electronic devices and the amount of power they consume, as well as shrinking things down, making things smaller and smaller, yet more and more energy efficient. And, you know, that is difficult. That is a big challenge. And I feel like even though it feels like we are getting there with it, again, as I say, I just feel like it's maybe a bit further out than maybe I think most of the world probably anticipated. So, yeah, I feel like maybe for me at the moment, I feel like maybe cloud gaming might slow down a bit in the next couple of years and then maybe pick up some pace again. But I hope I'm surprised. I hope it all goes off super quick and the next couple of years, as you say, like when it's almost seamless between the two. But yeah, I feel like it's a bit further away for me.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see, Pugs. Hopefully GPG will still be gone in 10 years time and we can look back on this show.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
And we can say, is Pugs right? Is Pugs not right?
Scott in his wheelchair, you know, from retirement home to jump on and do a show.
Yeah. I guess Sonic will still be going strong. Little BMG, Sonic never dies.
I've got some good news for you, chaps. Actually,
Sonic, it can't be good.
Oh, it is. It is Sonic based. I actually played Sonic Frontiers at EGX.
Oh, okay.
And it was a big store. Everything, they had all these big banners there, and it was all properly a proper Sega location. It was really good, actually. And so it was Flap and I that went. We went together on the Friday. We wasn't there all day, actually. We had the early access. We got there about 10 a.m. We left relatively early. I think we left by about 3 p.m. actually. We kind of felt like we'd done most of it by that point. But yeah, Sonic Frontiers, you know what? I was looking forward to it anyway, as I believe you are, Scott, as well. But yeah, I was
just
actually
to piss BMG off more than just, anything, if I'm
yeah, sure. But I was actually really impressed with how it felt to play. Like, it feels a lot better to play than what it looks like it does. And yeah, even when Flap said it, he was going in there and saying that he just felt that the color palette was wrong, like how Sonic's quite a bright, vibrant character and he's in quite a dark, gloomy-looking world, which I agreed with. But even after he went hands-on, he still held that opinion. However, when you're playing it, from his perspective, he said you can you get past it quite quickly and it flows quite well.
Nice.
And Sonic isn't too fast to control either, if that makes sense. Like, it feels right in the world, but he's kind of zoomed out enough that it feels like it all fits. And the targeting's spot on. It's really easy to control. It's easy to jump onto all of the grind rails and enemies and a few little abilities and stuff. Oh, it's really good. And when you want to do, you know, like how newer Sonic kind of had that boost mode. So when you hold the right trigger, you kind of go a bit faster, but it's still easy and nice to control. They kind of have this one button scheme in a way, like one button obviously to jump and one button's your homing button slash attack button. And it sounds like it's maybe too simple, but when you're playing it, it makes perfect sense in the moment and how it controls. And I was really pleasantly surprised at how much I liked it. And as soon as I put the control, because it was only a time demo, so it was about 20 minutes worth, and then it just immediately cut you off and said, thanks for playing. But as soon as I finished it, I put the controller down, looked at Flap, and I was like, this is fantastic. Like, this is almost a launch purchase for me. That's how much I enjoyed it.
That's really, really positive here. And to be fair, Pox, I've heard a lot of people saying similar things coming out of EGX, where they've gone into it with really, really low expectations because of the initial reveal. And I do think Sega made a complete arse of the reveal because I think they held back a lot of things. They kind of give the impression initially that it was just this big open, fairly barren open world, but obviously there's a lot more to the game than that. I don't know how much you actually got to play, but obviously you've kind of, I can't remember what they call, but you've kind of got those levels within the open world that are a little bit more
So you could get to those points. I saw people get into that on their screens when I kind of looked around afterwards. I didn't get that far personally because I was kind of just exploring the little nooks and crannies and whatever in the kind of the main open world part. But there's all these little secrets and things to find and things to do. So, and like these little puzzles exist everywhere as well. But they're not necessarily, well, the beginning part is like an extended tutorial. So there's these constant pop-ups on what to press and how to do it and things like that, as you would normally expect. But in terms of when you see these secrets just kind of scattered around, you're not handheld much in my experience. You're kind of just left to kind of figure it out. And if you don't have a certain ability to do, because you actually have a skill tree, which might be sound surprising. But so as you play the game, you kind of defeat enemies and you collect these little blue coin things. And when you get enough of those, you get a skill point. And then you have this skill tree that you can then spend those on. And certain of those abilities are what you then need to use to unlock and finish certain puzzles later on. And that's just like optional stuff outside of the Green Hill Zone levels and things like that. So it's as you I completely now that I've played it, especially hands-on, I completely agree that looking back at the announcement trailers and how they tried to show it off, it was not that well executed at all. But no, getting my hands on it, it was absolutely fantastic.
Nice. BMG.
I encourage you to give it a go.
You've got to be sold. You can't listen to Puck speak so passionately about Sonic Frontiers and his first-hand experience of playing it and not be sold.
Sure, just woke up. drifted off then, sorry.
You missed a really good conversation, BMG, mate.
No, Sonic, no. As some may recall, I had a Teddy
of Sonic that was left in my cab not so long ago, and I gave it to my dog, and she destroyed it. That's, you know, she feels about Sonic just the same as me. It's a game from the 90s that should just, it should stay there. It belongs there. We shouldn't be getting any more new games. I hope.
Ah, oh, but Open World Sonic is a whole new generation.
You just don't wait, right, man? You just wait, because what they didn't tell you is, once you get past that first area and that, you then have to pay to do each area. But then you get it on the blockchain, you see. And
Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. Sega are going to screw you with your pants around your ankles, I'm telling you.
Hey, just wait, BMG, until Ubisoft Quartz starts sneaking into your Assassin's Creed Infinity or whatever it's called, and you're going to get those NFTs.
Assassin's Creed Infinity is not a game.
It's a platform. It is a platform.
It's a hub world. I will give Ubisoft one of my children for Assassin's Creed stuff. That's the welcome, you know. That they can have everything, you know. I'll sign the house over and do whatever I need to do. No, one of them, the one that's stole the Sonic picture.
They've already signed him away for Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah. but it does, like you say, it's not really an old Sonic's never really been my thing, but when it was first announced, when it was first shown, I think everyone, even Sonic fans, were like, what is this? This is just a load of... And now people actually getting hands-on with it, getting to play it, getting to actually thinking, yeah, there's stuff that needs doing on it and, you know, improving. And obviously, it's, you know, they're still putting it together. But by the sounds of it, it's actually going to be a decent game. And will I try it? We'll see.
Because I know, I don't know how you feel about Sonic games in general, Scott, but my favourites were mainly the Adventure series and that kind of, like, that level of platforming, like mixture of platforming and speed. And then when it started going a bit more experimental into what we call Mon Sonic, you know, like Boost Sonic, whatever they call him now.
What did you call it there? Mon Sonic?
Yeah, Modern Sonic. That's what he's known as. But...
I thought you said Mon Sonic.
So, no, modern, Sonic. Modern, sorry.
Oh, I thought you said modern Sonic, yeah, no. Sorry.
Yeah, the more modern Sonic, the Boost games, I've not necessarily been much of a... I've played them, and I quite enjoy them, but I'm not a massive fan of them as much as the platforming stuff. So if you're into the older adventure-style type stuff, Frontiers feels like that.
Yeah, so my history with Sonic is... I'm very much a big fan of the 2D games. I think most people are, to be honest. Obviously, 3D is kind of when things went downhill. I was a massive fan of Sonic Adventure 1 and 2. However, it's difficult because Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 were at a very different time of my life. And I've not played them since. And I don't want to play them because I'm not too sure how they'll hold up to kind of like modern standards. So I'm not too sure, you know, whether I'd like them today or not. Sonic Mania was excellent, but obviously it was a throwback to kind of the old school 2D games, and Sonic Mania is probably my favorite and the best Sonic game they've released. So I did feel that they had a little bit of a challenge going back down the 3D route. So I'm not too sure, but I'm really, really pleased to hear that, Pux. Like really, really pleased. It's
it's put me in a position now where I'm much more excited for the release than I originally was, which I think is a good thing.
I'll be picking up when it launches.
Did they announce the release date? It's November, isn't it?
8th of November, yeah.
Yeah. Just getting ahead of God of War, I believe.
Yeah, well, it would have got absolutely crushed. Yeah, well, because it was quite a stacked month, really. You know, I think Sonic would have been absolutely tanked in sales like Titanfall 2 was, because you would have had Skull and Bones on the 8th and God of War on the 9th. It would have stood no chance.
Well, speaking of Skull and Bones, is this worth bringing up now, do you reckon? Because that was kind of a weird surprise announcement earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, does anyone really care about Skull and Bones? I know it was one of the topics, but like,
I give zero shits about the game. I haven't cared much about it at all. The more I see Ubisoft stuff that, you know, they had that kind of that in-depth feature trailer about all these things you can do and get, you know, oh, you have these pirates and things you have to do. You do a tiny bit of walking on land or something. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. They didn't quite make it clear. And then, I don't know, I feel like it's a game that, bear in mind, this was originally planned, I think, what was it, after Assassin's Creed Black Flag, when people just wanted that game, but just the boat bit. And they've taken like what feels like 50 years to try to put something together. And they're just cocking it up. And like, that's, I mean, pun intended, that's, the ship has sailed, right? Like that, for that type of game. Like, I feel like people have gone beyond Black Flag now, far beyond it, to the point they don't care too much about it anymore. And to be so close to release and say, ah, oh, we've done some more internal testing, and we've realised we need to do a bit more polish than we thought we did. And it's just like, oh, God, okay, by the time it's actually going to come out, nobody's going to care at all. Like, I feel like there's minimal shits given now, let alone in four months' time.
Weren't they obligated to make it, though? Isn't it because...
That was the rumour.
Yeah.
Really?
I've heard,
by who? Do we know?
It's by the government that that gave them all the money to actually make the game. I can't remember what the name of the...
Yeah, so I believe it's made by Ubisoft Singapore.
That's it.
And the rumour earlier this year was that they had to basically release it this year because they had received funding from the Singaporean government in order to develop the game, I guess, to kind of help with employment in that sector and in that country. I'm not too sure exactly how it works. But the rumor was they kind of had to ship it that year because of whatever agreement it was. But whether that was just a load of bullshit in the end or whether they've come to some sort of agreement with the government, I'm not too sure. But either way, I think, you know, a delay is probably the right thing, particularly in November. But I don't see a window for this game that makes an awful lot of sense.
It's so strange, though, isn't it? It's a game that's been in development hell, changed probably about 100 times. And it's like, why? Why do we need this now? And to charge £70 for it.
Yep, £70.
It's a full price game because Ubisoft announced, they did announce that they are going in line with the likes of Sony and EA. And AAA games will be going up to the $69.99 standard, which, you know, we know it was going to happen eventually. So it's, you know, it wasn't a shock when it happened. But they said for their AAA titles that aren't AAA, you know, the price will be different. Like Assassin's Creed Mirage is actually only a $44.99 game or a $39.99 game. I think it's $39.99 in the UK, I think.
What, Mirage coming out next year?
Yeah.
Really?
It's not, wow. it's not a $70 game. It's actually, I can't remember if it's $39.99 or it'll be $44.99 here in the UK. So it's not a full price title.
Wow, okay.
Because originally Mirage was going to be an expansion for Valhalla, but then, as you know, as some things do, it just span off, got bigger than what an expansion is, and they're releasing it as a standalone game.
$44.99 by the looks of things, BMG.
So it's not a full price game, but it's, you know, it's more think of the size of Assassin's Creed 1.
You know, it's sad now that we're at a point in time where $49.99 is deemed not a full game,
not a full price game.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's still £30 too expensive, BMG. I think if you would ask me,
well, what's Sonic? What's that going to be? Is that going to be a 70?
I'm getting the super duper deluxe edition for that.
That comes
with like a life size Sonic.
No, I think it does actually have about three different tiers that you can buy. And some of them are equally batshit crazy and ridiculous. Let me look.
Is it going to be like that Sonic Origins where you get a border and maybe a different song and?
Oh, I've been in that game of like
rewind
like
or whatever.
Five
it is.
Or six different types of releases. It was
confusing. It was bloody ridiculous that, wasn't it? Absolutely bloody ridiculous.
Pay an extra tenner, you can have a border.
Some of those stuff was bloody bollocks, man. One of them was like you could move the background of the main menu, I think was one of the perks, which basically just meant you could use the cursor and you could like rotate the island in the background of like the menu.
It's like, who cares? That should be a standard feature anyway.
Bloody ridiculous. That chart got mocked. They got ripped to pieces when they released that chart showing the different versions of the game.
Well, the good news here with Frontiers, there are only two editions, which are the Digital Standard and Digital Deluxe. Difference being, with the Standard, you get a something called an Adventurer's Treasure Box. And then in the Digital Deluxe, you get that as well as an Explorer's Treasure Box. whatever the hell they mean.
You open the box, he gives you a border.
Well, okay, so it says here, for the Adventurer's Treasure Box, you get some skill points. That's cool. You get whatever these are, red seeds of power and the blue seeds of defense. And then in the Explorer pack, you get Amy's memory tokens. You get a portal gear, whatever that means, Chaos Emerald vault keys, and you get additional gloves and shoes for Sonic.
That's got microtransactions written all over it.
And you get a digital art book of 25-track digital mini soundtrack. I mean...
What more do you want, Pox?
What exactly? What more do I want?
Just
curious, though.
Show me where to sign. Where do I put my credit card? I'm in.
Curious, Pox. Did you, when you was actually playing the game, is it kind of like a bit like RPG type where you could open your menu and see Sonic and change things to, you know, like better shoes and gloves or something?
Yeah, and no, it's kind of... A lot of people do kind of compare it to Breath of the Wild in a very vague kind of veil. And I do agree with it in that, you know, you get a menu pop up and you kind of see him and you didn't have anything at the point I was at to do anything. But I think there was some sort of menu where you could do that kind of stuff. But then the skill point tree was like a separate menu. You kind of like it's quite simple looking, but then it's typical, you know, you highlight it and then a window on the right appears with a little video clip of what the skill does and a little description underneath it. And you had to buy the first one, which was like, it's called Psyloop, but it's the move you've seen in all of the trailers when it all kind of goes a bit slow-mo and you have like a sparkly trail go behind you. That seems to be kind of like the gimmick of the game. And there's like three different trees underneath that to unlock stuff. So yeah, it's kind of in that vein.
Okay. Yeah, because it's kind of gives. I'm looking at it from what I've seen of it. I was getting like RPG vibes. You know, you're building up your Sonic, making him better, changing skills and, you know, powers in and out to do things. But
yeah, it's not like a level up system. It's not like he becomes like level 2, 3, 4 or anything like that, like an RPG. It's just like as you progress, you get these points and then you just kind of spend them on this skill tree to get an ability of your choice. And it kind of expands naturally like that rather than by a number.
Right. Okay. But yeah, to be honest, like Sonic wise of what I've ever played is the Sonic Adventures for Dreamcast. But the only bit I did was to get the little virtual pet thing in the Dreamcast memory card. Yeah. That's all I was interested in.
I did that as well.
I loved Chao Garden.
Best thing Sonic's ever done. And you could put him back into the game and then let him run around and pick another one up, put it in my controller. Oh, you know, got it on my little... They were the best memory cards ever.
Yeah, I miss BMUs, man. Those were excellent.
I feel like I'd seen not too long ago people saying that literally, that the Chao Garden would almost make a perfect smartphone game, and I'm sure people would be all over it, or at least Sonic fans. But it's the perfect kind of thing for a mobile game.
It's just a Tamagotchi, isn't it? Essentially, exactly, like fleshed out Tamagotchi.
You just make them fight and do races and stuff. Yeah.
I had the Digimon one, the Tamagotchi, the Digimon that came in it was like a blue brick. And you had to like level it up, make you grow it up and fight it. You actually plugged it into other people that had it so you could battle them. Oh, it was awesome.
I remember those. But I think the one I had like, I think it was like the version 3, whatever they called it, the one that was like a pedometer. So you had to like shake it. Obviously, you're meant to walk around with it, but as kids on the playground, everyone was just shaking this thing to make it progress. And then, as you say, then you kind of link up and battle and stuff. That's kind of the last experience I had. Yeah.
Oh man, I would love it if someone did something like that, man. I used to love the VMU. It was just so cool being able to take that, you know, when I went out in the car with my parents. Skies of Arcadia had a little mini game. I love Skies of Arcadia. I was in the Chao Garden and get home, stick it in your controller and off you go. So
kind of what you're leading on to. Like I really liked as well that when you were just playing a normal game of something, that like sometimes you see like an animated sprite if you did certain things in the game and stuff like that. Like again, way ahead of its time.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. Bring back the Dreamcast, man. Bring us a Dreamcast 2.
Gone before its time. Like
so, Yeah, unfortunately. So just while I guess we might be moving on to new talk, I do just want to say thank you to a few people who've joined us in the chat while we've been speaking. We've got Anime Raza in here who just says, yeah, it's 90s and early 2000s, nostalgia time. Yeah, nostalgia is a very powerful drug. He also says the Chow Garden made like a Harvest Moon game could be a thing. Mm. Yeah, give me like a Viva Pinata Chow Garden type game. You know, maybe merge them.
Viva Pinata is dead. Stop
Viva
trying to revive
Pinata
it.
Viva Pinata is one of the best games of all time, BMG.
Wow, it's gone. One of that my is favorites. A statement, that is.
Yeah, it needs to come back. That will come back and that will set the world on fire, I tell you. So we do also have Stubbs in the chat. We've got It's Timmy who joined and has had to jump off. Thanks for joining, mate. Fresh from EGX, just like our good man Pucks. We've got Indie Gamer in the chat as well. Indie, thank you very much for dropping by there, mate.
He's a very beautiful man.
For anyone that's listening. He's very handsome.
Very handsome.
Very handsome man.
Oh, first time face reveal on Twitter the other day, wasn't it?
It was. It was a big, big moment. I think Indy should be getting himself on camera on his shows a bit more. I think so. With the sultry tones that he's got and that beautiful face of his.
OnlyFans.
Yeah, the Indy Gamer OnlyFans.
He needs to do an audio book, you know, just sit there and narrate a book. I'd listen to him all day.
On camera, like that old BBC show.
That's it, yeah. Sitting in the chair with the glasses and the pipe. And
fire exactly in the background. Yeah,
pint of beer or whiskey next year. Yeah,
yeah, not a can of Foster's, BMG something. Something a little bit more classic. Yeah. I imagine Indy. It would be like a really fancy like tumbler with like some straight whiskey and maybe a single large ice cube in it and a cigar.
I can
something
picture
like
this
that.
Perfectly
yeah,
as you're describing
that's exactly
it as
what,
well.
What I'm thinking. Slippers and like a really sad, kind of like old fashioned.
Hollow
Knight like
slippers on.
Thing.
Yep, I can picture that. Yeah.
exactly. So, Pixel Slapper's in the chat as well, saying he's lurking while playing Forza Horizon 5. Thank you very much, Pixel Slapper, mate. I think Indie Gamer's getting a little chuckle out of what we're saying, but it was lovely to see your beautiful little face, mate. And speaking of EGX,
can I talk about one more thing before we move on regarding EGX, if that's all right?
Yeah, well, I was actually just going to say, Pucks, I think hopefully we'll be able to get a few more people then next year. BMG was saying in chat he's hoping to go. Indie's already booked up. I'll hopefully be able to drop by next year. So yeah, Pucks, I was actually going to ask you, we talked about Sonic, but how was the rest of EGX?
Yeah, it was a really good day, actually. I do find it I was partly surprised people could fit it in into multiple days, because as I say, maybe Flap and I just went around it too quick and missed some stuff, but we was confident we saw almost everything, and it was a good day overall. We really enjoyed it. The one thing, so they also had Street Fighter 6 there, but it was really disappointing because, you know, like, so, I have to post a picture that I took on Twitter or something, but the Sonic Frontiers one, as I say, had like these like massive displays of like the big promo pictures and the release date and the title, and it was loads of them. It was everywhere. And then the Street Fighter 6 one, I thought would, like, you know, Capcom's not a small company, right? I would have thought they'd have been of a similar vein, like all these massive banners, big screenshots on massive billboards surrounded by, you know, screens and consoles and stuff. But it was nothing like that. It was just like this stand that was at the very back of the venue with just like this really small, like the standard EGX banner with just Street Fighter 6 written on it. And like, if you wasn't looking for it, you could easily miss it. And I thought it was a bit unfortunate that it was just kind of thrown to the back like that, really. But the one thing I was going to talk about, actually, and I'm interested to know if Indie Gamer was there and saw this as well. So, like a lot of these events, they have like a general like PC technology section. Like they had this kind of like full-scale Formula One car where you could sit in that, but then it also had three massive displays in front of it. So you almost had this like 180-degree like Formula One racing experience, which was quite cool. But the other one that they had, which Flap and I tried, and I was really impressed with, and it was only, we was told by the guy, there was only one of these in the country, but it was like a 32-inch TV. It was basically 4K, two 4K monitors squeezed into one. And the idea, and it's got like these four cameras on it, it's from a Dutch company, and this thing costs about 10 grand at the moment, and it's still kind of in a prototype stage. But effectively, it's a VR display without needing glasses or anything like that. You just sit in this chair, and it's got these eye tracking cameras. So this thing senses your eyeballs, knows where you're looking and knows where you are, and will focus the screen for you depending on where your head position is. And it was like a flight sim game, so like a space flight game, first person. So you had this joystick that you could use with your hand. And the guy was saying to us, oh, like put your face closer and further away from the screen and left and right, and you can actually look around the environment. And we thought, like,
wow,
what are you talking about? And then we did it. You kind of lean forward, and the whole display inside kind of rotates around where you're, like, obviously you can't look in it like a VR, like an Oculus or anything. But for something that's VR glassesless, and you're just kind of sitting in a chair normally, like, it was so impressive. And, like, you could lean your head left and right, and it would follow you, and it would track, and you could almost see around the corners. Even though it's a flat screen, you could see that it was 3D, like actual 3D coming in your face. And it was really impressive. I'd never experienced anything like it before. And, Indy, if you're still listening, I'd love to know if you saw that and had a chance to sit in it, because that was a really good experience, actually. And one thing I did play, talking about games now, is Planet of Lana was there.
Ah, nice. I know you're really looking forward to that as well, aren't you, Puck? So Indy's looking forward to that. Luke's looking forward to it.
And that was really nice, because I had like a really big display banner for it and all the rest of it. And we kind of sat down and jumped on with some Xbox controllers, and that was really good fun. And kind of like how I imagined, it plays basically like Inside in a way. Obviously, it's got the little mechanic with the little cat-like creature thing that follows you around, and you have to kind of make him do stuff. But it plays like that. But that was really good fun. What else we played? They had Modern Warfare 2 was there, and they basically had it was basically the beta. We lined up for it because we got in there quite early, and it was a small queue. So we thought, ah, let's just line up. It might be, because we thought maybe it might be a bit of a campaign or something, but nope, it was just multiplayer. Because there was an open beta anyway, it was a bit like, what's the point of this being here? Like, you can play this at home.
Yeah.
What was it playing on? Was it PlayStation, PC, or Xbox?
All different consoles there. We ended up actually getting split up. So I think Flap was on a PC and I ended up on a PS5.
Oh, okay.
And actually, the force feedback on the triggers was actually really cool. I've not properly used a PS5 controller before. So that was my first experience. And I quite liked it, actually. It was good fun.
Yeah, that DualSense. It's one hell of a controller.
Oh, and actually, this might be for you, Scott, as well, but they actually had a Steam Deck section. And so I actually got to hold a Steam Deck and have a go for the first time ever.
Nice. What were your thoughts?
In terms of the hardware, it feels really comfortable. It's a lot lighter than I thought it would be as well. And when I've seen the side-by-side comparisons for the Switch, like, you know, in images, you think, Christ, that's a much more of a monster than a Switch. Like, is it going to be too big? But when you're actually holding it and like moving it around, it's just ridiculously comfortable to hold. Depending on the game, I feel like maybe some of the analog sticks can sometimes feel like they're a bit further away than maybe what you anticipate, but you quite quickly get around that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the only game they had that you could play was Neon White, that anime kind of card game. Like the anime first person game, but you pick up cards and kind of do it.
I was actually really looking forward to that game. I haven't. It's on my wish list on Steam. I've not picked it up yet. But that's really cool, Pox. I mean, I did have a Steam Deck pre-order. I got my email the same day Indy did. But unfortunately, a few days beforehand, my car was back in the garage. And I had a rather expensive garage bill of... lots of money. So unfortunately I had to cancel my Steam Deck pre-order because I couldn't afford it at the time, which is a bit of a shame, because I was really looking forward to getting that. So hopefully, you know, in the not too distant future, I will be able to get one. But I'm kind of thinking now I might wait to see if they do like a revised version with like maybe a better, like smaller bezeled OLED screen or something along those lines, you know, maybe something a little bit more upgraded. But I'll try to pick one up when things aren't so expensive, whenever that might be. Who knows? So but you enjoyed EGX then Pox. You look to go back next year, do you think?
I'd like to go back. Yeah, I'm sure I'd be able to. There's no reason why I can't as of right now. So yeah, if everyone else is up for it, and maybe we'll probably meet up with people this time around. So that'd be good.
Little GPG meetup, obviously. Indy's already there. Hopefully Luke, unfortunately, couldn't make it because he was unwell. So hopefully he'll be able to make it across.
He was not happy.
Yeah.
He was not happy at all.
Yeah. So Wonderful. Well, what we might do, guys, is we've still got an absolute bot load that we could potentially go through. What we might do is we might keep them for a future show, because I do kind of want to wrap things up a little earlier tonight, because I do have some plans after the show tonight. But I thought maybe what we'll do is we'll pick through one more thing to sort of wrap up the show, and then we can save the rest. So, but I'll leave it up to you guys. I want the decision to be unanimous between the two of you. So the options are, we can either talk about October Games with Gold, or just Games with Gold in general, that came out today. The PlayStation Stars controversy with customer service, or the Halo rumors that have surfaced. Do you guys have any preferences of what we use to sort of wrap up the show?
Ooh, I'm easy. Go on, Pokes. You pick. I think I picked the first topic, so you go for it.
What was the first one again?
We did Stadia.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I wasn't at the beginning. So, okay. Why don't we talk about this Halo stuff, actually?
Okay. Oh, Christ. Maybe, I might have to extend the show by an hour. We can jump into it, and we can maybe follow, because
we've got about 6 minutes. So is that going to be enough time?
We could go a little longer, Pucks. Don't worry. It's not like a hard finish, so that's not too much of a problem. But we were actually meant to have a show. We did have Ains from Season Gaming lined up for a show where we were going to chat all things Halo. But unfortunately, it was the evening that the Queen passed, so it didn't feel appropriate at the time to have the show, regardless of your feelings of the monarchy. We'll not maybe touch on that.
Had
to cancel that show, unfortunately. And it'll be good to maybe get Ains on a future show. I know he was up for it. We could chat about it in more detail. But yeah, the Halo rumors, Pucks, are pretty wild. And have kind of swum back and forth today. You know, first it was like, oh, it's bollocks. And then it's like, oh, actually, there might be some substance here. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I know Jez Corden was on Box and Burgers World of Gaming podcast earlier today. I believe he was maybe chatting a little bit about that. I'm not too sure how much detail he was able to get into. He did say he'd have more to share on Friday's Xbox 2 podcast, so hopefully there'll be more to share. But yeah, the rumors were pretty wild, and it centered more around the Certain Affinity Battle Royale mod. The rumors being that's been delayed significantly to, say, 2024, 2025, I believe. And also they've made the switch from Slipspace to Unreal Engine 5 for that particular mode, which...
That's the big one for me, I think. The first question was almost like, well, why? But then going through some of the Twitter stuff I'd seen, I'm no expert by all means, but there are so many people out there that feel like they know anything and everything about how games are made, and then they kind of show that they don't know just by what they say. And it's almost described as if like the game engine is just like this small piece. It's just interchangeable, like nothing else has to change. When in reality, you know, a game engine is the base foundation of any game. So like, if you change that, then everything else above that has to be changed, just even if it's just altered to suit the engine. And that is a massive load of work there, and it's not a simple change to make, because I remember seeing people saying, oh, how would progression work if it was true and you were changing engines, because it's two different engines. And it's just like, well, data is different to the engine, right? Because data is all saved in a server somewhere, and whatever engine you pick, you just set that up to interpret what that data is. So in terms of cross progression and save data, I don't think there's no issues there, really. You know, there's nothing stopping you from using Unity and Unreal Engine for the same, like, for two different things and sharing the same data. It is possible, is what I'm trying to say. And quite easily, relatively speaking. But I did find it interesting that this whole, they're changing engines to Unreal Engine, because a lot of these companies tend to be quite adamant that they want to keep their own engine, especially after putting so much time and resource and money into developing these systems. But equally, in more and more recent times, we are seeing companies, and you know, games are becoming more and more complex now, to the point where maintaining in-house engines, which are only made for specific genres of games which that business makes, becomes harder and harder, to the point where it becomes almost cheaper to outsource your tech and say, oh, I know. Let's, you know, who else is out there? Oh, I know. Unreal Engine almost does everything. and you pay them a pretty penny, but ultimately you save a load more money in the long run because you haven't got to try to maintain your own engine. So yeah, I can believe it when it comes to reasons why, but it does just seem strange, doesn't it, that all of this time and effort to get Halo Infinite out, you know, over the finish line after all the delays and stuff, and then now they're saying, actually, yeah, we're going to delay this rumored extra mode because we're going to rebuild the entire thing. Like,
yeah,
it just seems crazy, but I can believe it.
Yeah,
in a really weird way.
There have been examples of studios that I think aren't CD Projekt Red, haven't they moved over The Witcher to Unreal?
Yes,
from their engine. Who else has made a Switch?
Square Enix did the jump with Kingdom Hearts and the newer Final Fantasies as well.
There was another company that made the Switch. It's escaping me now. So we have seen it in the past. Now, it's probably worth mentioning, I think the rumors are specifically regarding certain Affinity's Battle Royale mode pucks.
Yes.
Not Halo Infinite in general. I think it might be worth just making that clear. I don't think Halo Infinite's going to get like a update one day and it's going to be on Unreal rather than Slipspace. But
I think it's more around like
this new mode, which... But I think...
I'm more surprised that, you know, if this is true, like the fact that this has potentially been greenlit as a thing that's going to be done, like this is in a project plan somewhere saying that, right, we're going to rebuild the game in this new engine, that's insane. Like, all that, why?
I think what it goes to show is, if this is true, I think it shows what an absolute shit show the Slipspace engine is is probably... highlights why Halo Infinite has the issues it has right now. If this turns out to be true, I'd be comfortable saying that I think pretty much every issue that Halo Infinite has right now can probably be attributed back to issues with the engine. You know, whether that be co-op, whether that be the split screen, I guess that's co-op as well, but split screen multiplayer in general, whether that be the live service in terms of getting new maps out, getting new modes out. I think a lot of that will likely could be attributed to the engine. And the fact that this mod, that honestly, I think Halo will likely need to revitalize it as a kind of a mainstream platform if it wants to get there, this Battle Royale mode, I think it needs it. If that's been delayed to 2024 or even beyond, I think that is pretty devastating for Halo Infinite as a game.
Because didn't it have this whole 8 to 10 year plan, wasn't it, about it's going to have all these constant content drops? I mean, I'm sure you must be sighing in anger at that, but
I never really believed the 10-year plan bullshit anyway, if I'm being completely honest, Pucks. I think that was more just to sort of demonstrate it was going to be a live service that they intended to update for a long time. But you could say that about Master Chief Collection. You know, that's something that they're still working on at the moment. You could say it's getting more and better updates than Infinite. But I think realistically, if certain Affinity have basically said, look, we can't do what we want to do with this engine to create this game, I think that just speaks volumes about Slipspace. And I wonder what the future of Infinite is, if that's the case.
So didn't the guy that create this the engine, hasn't he gone? He's not even with the studio anymore, is he?
Yeah, the lead engineer on Slipspace. Yeah, he's since left. Yeah,
the only guy that knows how it works is gone.
if they've not documented this engine that well, then it wouldn't surprise me actually in the long run if they go, oh Christ, yeah, let's just outsource our engine tech, because trying to hire someone to do this and then have that knowledge disappear potentially at any moment is too risky in today's world, I think, in game dev, because games are just so much more complicated now to make. Like AAA level, I mean, you know, but because it's not just the tech either. It's the player expectations, and then the developers obviously knowing that they need to almost meet these expectations of where tech needs to go when you're talking big AAA scale. So I can understand why, but
I wonder if they'll probably work a bit if they are going to be going to Unreal or whatever side of it is. I wonder if they're going to work like alongside with Coalition. Because obviously they seem to be the ones that are quite up to par with Unreal 5. So because I would assume that certain Affinity are going to do it in Unreal 5. I would assume. Seems that's what
coalition are using, so they could go hand in hand working with them.
Fair, not just that as well. I think, you know, if we're talking the Halo Battle Royale being made in Unreal, I mean, you know, Unreal's, you know, Fortnite is developed by Epic. Do you know what I mean? They've developed their tech to be suitable for battle royales as well as any other large scale world building type thing. So, like, what better company to get support from than people who basically helped define battle royale? Develop the tech to support it, you know.
Yeah, and obviously talking about the coalition, yeah, you've got a team that's got a massive amount of expertise with that engine. I mean, the coalition were involved in the development of Unreal 5, I believe. And they assisted Epic with the actual creation of it. They were obviously involved in that pretty staggering Matrix demonstration, that experience, whatever you want to call it as well. So, but yeah, I just think a Switch, even if it is just for this Battle Royale mode for Halo, I think is probably bigger than it might seem to a lot of people, because I think it really just highlights the fundamental issues with Halo Infinite. And if they do switch, then surely Halo Infinite, like, they've got to be working on a sequel, whatever that might be, Halo Infinite 2 or whatever. Surely they've got to be working on.
Yeah, I kind of feel that they started Halo planning game. That as soon as the issues were realized when the game released. Yeah.
Maybe not.
What if the waiting? Obviously, we were talking in the green room. I think that your certain affinities, Battle Royale, if that's what it's going to be, I don't think it's going to fall into the Halo Infinite. I think it's going to be a standalone thing, separate. I think get some distance between everything that's going on with Halo Infinite, everything that's going on with their live service side of stuff, and have it as a standalone thing. I think it would do better. It's going to get, because if you start putting what they've done in there, they're all going to get tied with the same brush. It's all 3-4-3. If it's separate, you get enough time away from it, do it separate. You could, Fortnite do. Look how they incorporate, like, stories and things into the Battle Royale, and it all works on some sort of level, but it does quite well. They could do something like that. They could have a Battle Royale. It could have their own, maybe slight bit like Call of Duty, where it's got its own, like, a small campaign or something like that, and do something spin-off, do something different, and maybe we could see in the future they go 3-4-3, give them something else to do, because I think, aren't they working on another project as well that isn't Halo, or a different type of Halo? I can't remember.
That was vaguely a rumor from Jez a good few months back, but I don't think there's anything concrete.
No, so maybe you could see the development stuff, depending how this project goes. Project Tatanka. Depending how that goes, Microsoft might hand the next game to them. Or instead of making a full new game, incorporate it into their whatever they've made, the Battle Royale or whatever it's going to be.
You could see like a Call of Duty / Warzone type situation where Warzone's obviously its own platform, and then because Warzone weathered the Vanguard storm, I think it would be fair to say, you know, Vanguard came out to fairly lukewarm reception at best, but Warzone being its own thing, continued in the background, was able to do its own crazy stuff like the Godzilla events and things like that were completely independent. So it could be something like that. Now, as a Halo fan, what I would say is Halo Infinite feels like a fucking good Halo game. It feels like the best Halo game. What does a Halo Infinite game in Unreal created by Certain Affinity feel like to play? Is it actually going to be Halo Infinite at that point, or is it just going to be a different first person shooter with the Halo name? You know what I mean? Like, is it going to feel like Call of Duty or Titanfall, or is it actually going to feel like Halo? Now, the one saving grace is the CEO of Certain Affinities, Max Hoberman, I believe his name is. Apologies if I pronounced that incorrectly. He was actually one of the original multiplayer designers on Halo 2 and 3. So that does give me a lot of hope for the game, because Halo 2 and Halo 3 are still two of my best multiplayer games of all time. But still, what does a Halo game in a non-Halo engine feel like to play? Is it still Halo, or is it going to feel like something
I personally don't feel like that's much of a problem, though. Because I think the Halo fan base, again, someone like yourself, Scott, and all the people like yourself who absolutely love the franchise and know how it should be, like, I feel like these people already know how the game needs to feel to play. And I think that no matter what engine you make the game in, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to replicate the feel, because it's all just down to fine tuning and good programming, right? And there's no reason why you can't just replicate that in a different engine. So, but I know what you mean, because you see a lot of people that kind of just do a hard copy of the base Unreal Engine template and then just use that. But then the bigger games, they basically end up tweaking everything anyway. But I'd like to feel that, you know, they'd honor the Halo fan base enough to to give them that Halo feel. And I feel like it kind of has to be, right? Even if you say it's just a battle royale, whoever you'd like to say it, quote unquote, that it still needs to feel like Halo, I think, because that's going to be its key differentiator, isn't it? As you say, to things like Warzone or Apex and whatever else.
Well, the best way to make it feel like Halo is give it co-op that Halo Infinite doesn't have. Still,
yeah.
Scott Silas says it all, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I still really enjoy playing the game. I play it a lot, but I also cannot disagree with any single issue or complaint that anyone has about the games. I agree with them, but I still enjoy
playing. I'm really confused. How? Because they did the flight, didn't they, for the co-op? And apparently, from what everyone was saying, I don't think I really saw anything negative, really, probably the odd bug. It worked seamlessly, it worked brilliant, it was perfect, ready to go. You felt like it was good to go. And then November, and it's like, what? Why November? What's drastically gone wrong with it that they have to wait till November?
I honestly don't think there was anything necessarily wrong, BMG. If I was to hazard a guess, and it would be entirely that, I guess, I think it's purely to try and stick with, like, the release of the winter update. I think it's to have, like, you know, specified scheduled dates where things release.
Oh, so instead of having new season.
Yeah, so the winter update, which effectively is season 3, like, for, you know, the winter update comes with more bloody content than the season 2 update did, you know.
Crazy.
So with the winter update, they can say, you know, look at all this stuff we're giving you at once, rather than kind of trickling it out over time. I think that's maybe where it's come from. I could be wrong. But yeah, it's not too far away now, and I'm looking forward to jumping back in.
It's just bizarre. I think it is
BMG, you're not wrong there, mate.
Maybe it's related to, obviously, with Bonnie Ross leaving the studio, maybe management that's taken over, because obviously her role's now been split up. I think it's between three, it's like three heads now. It's all, they've split it up. Maybe they've looked at it and said, nah, we're changing this, or we're delaying this or something. Who knows? It's a very weird situation with Halo. And I don't quite understand everything that's gone on. I would have happily delayed another year, so then we could have had everything at once. I would have sooner have took the flak of, oh my God, it's delayed another year, you know, and then bring it out this year, absolutely brilliant, than just go every month or every week where it's something new that Halo's done wrong. They can't catch a break, bless them.
they can't. And like, if this news does turn out to be true, then that's just more negativity around, not necessarily even Halo Infinite, it's just the Halo franchise, and even beyond that, Xbox Game Studios in general, you know. So I could honestly talk about this for bloody hours. if I could be honest, there's a lot. I'm hoping we get like a little bit more information on it soon, because it will be and honestly, I think 343 might even need to come out and comment on it, because the story's kind of unwinding and flying around the internet with, you know, nothing really no control over the narrative. So they may have to come out and maybe discuss it, maybe, you know, get out of ahead of it and just say, look, no, that this isn't true, or it's a completely different experience, that yes, it's being developed in Unreal, but that was the plan all along, or whatever. They might have to maybe consider trying to get out ahead of it, but we'll hopefully have Ains on in a future show, and we can get even deeper into
if only they followed what Destiny's done.
And vault content, yeah, you're absolutely right, BMG. As long as they just got rid of old content before they brought the new one back, content in, everything.
At least they've got content to get rid of.
Oh, burn, sick burn. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, we'll get some more news. We'll maybe chat about it next week, as I say. Jez did say you hope to have something to share on the Xbox too, which is normally on a Friday evening. So we'll maybe have something juicy over the weekend, and we can maybe chat about it more next week if people aren't sick of it. So we'll have to see. So yeah, I guess with that, unless you guys want to chat about anything else, what we could do there is we can end the show. Like I said, do have some plans afterwards that I wanted to get to this evening. So a little bit of a shorter show than last week. But Pox, BMG, is there anything else in particular, anything that we've said that you wanted to chat about before we wrap up for today?
No, I'm away. You need to go, so I'm happy to call it there.
Same.
Wonderful. Cool. Well, thank you all very much for joining. We've seen some chat going on there. A lot of VGX talk. Great to see Indie Gamer, Anime Raza, Stubbs, It's Timmy, Pixel Slapper, Mesuko, Def Leppard, anyone else that would join. Thank you all very, very much. If you do, or if you can, the usual, please like, share, subscribe. All that jazz would be greatly appreciated. Fails to make me feel uncomfortable saying that, but it feels, you know, I feel obligated to do so. And yeah, I just want to say thank you once again to our special guest, BMG. Not too many bad takes tonight, BMG. I think you've kind of strayed away from the
well, apart from typical Sonic hatred, but we'll let that slide.
That's standard with Sonic.
We'll give him that one. But yeah, but thank you very much for joining us, BMG. Hopefully you've enjoyed being on the show again.
Yeah, it's been fun. I always enjoy myself when I'm on GPG, whether it's in chat, whether it's on live on the show, or whether I'm even catching up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can find GPG everywhere. Make sure you give a 5-star rating there as well for the guys, because they do a brilliant show. And yeah, no, brilliant. Always enjoy myself. Always enjoy sitting down chatting with you guys. It's always interesting.
Thank you very much, mate. You're too kind. You are far too kind, mate. To be honest, I've not even looked at Spotify to see if we've got any reviews. I know we're on there, but I use Pocket Casts. So, and obviously I don't tend to listen to our show's back because if I'm being honest, I bloody hate listening to the sound of my own voice. But Pox, after a few technical hurdles at the beginning, it was great to have you back on the show, mate. I know it's been a little while. Hopefully it won't be quite as long until you're able to next bless us with your presence, mate. But hopefully you've enjoyed being back.
No, oh, definitely. Thank you very much. And thanks for hosting, Scott, as well. I appreciate you've taken the reins quite a lot recently. And I know we haven't said it much, but I do appreciate it. I know Flav does as well. So thank you very much for your efforts, Scott. It's very much appreciated. And I've really enjoyed being back. Love talking games with you guys and the community. And I'm really looking forward to doing it again very soon.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, mate. Yeah. Obviously, we're trying to keep things going. We're trying to obviously just get things back on track, get something a little bit more regular. Apologies that we were a little bit inconsistent recently. Hopefully, we'll have another show next week, either Thursday or Sundays. We'll keep people updated on the socials. Link to the Discord, little plug, is in the description. We'll keep updates on there as well. And we can continue the conversation there as well. If you're interested in joining, please do. But with that, I will get the outro video queued, and thank you all very much again for joining, and we will see you all on the next show. Take care.